You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Goldhawk Fights Back for You on AM 740 Zoomer Radio. Goldhawk Fights Back for You airs Monday to Friday, 11 to 1 on AM 740 Zoomer Radio.
Usually the way it goes, out comes a report from some agency or organization or some group of people, and other people will come along and say, well, I disagree with the results of the study or the whatever going on from some other group. Well, Aaron Weir, who no moss grows on Aaron Weir, may I say, he's an economist and research associate at the Canadian Center for Policy Alternatives. He was ready yesterday with a pre-buttal, that's like before the fact, right? Not a rebuttal, but a pre-buttal, of the latest Fraser Institute study of the labor force in Canada. And he joined us on the line now from... You're in Regina today, are you, Aaron?
Hey, Dale. I have to say, you're breaking up a lot. I'm having trouble hearing you, but hopefully you can hear me okay.
Well, I'm fine. You're not taking me in on your toaster or something, are you? You got a regular phone? Uh-oh.
Yeah, no, I'm sorry, I couldn't hear most of what you said there.
Are you on a cell phone?
No, I'm on a landline here.
Good grief! What's the state of phones in? I'll try to speak slowly and clearly, Aaron. I know that you have a number of things to say about the report just out by the Fraser Institute that supposedly measures the labor market performance in Canada. Just give us a first blush at that. What's wrong with the way the Fraser Institute has gone at studying the labor market performance in Canada and the U.S.?
Well, I think a big problem is that the Fraser Institute focuses almost entirely on the sheer number of jobs rather than on the quality of those jobs. So the Fraser Institute's Index of Labor Market Performance contains five indicators, total employment growth, private sector employment growth, the unemployment rate, the duration of unemployment, and average gross domestic product per worker. So the first four of those things are basically counting the number of jobs that are available, and the last one looks at sort of the total wealth of the economy, which could influence wages and the quality of jobs, but might not necessarily do that. One example from this study is that Ontario sort of performs poorly in terms of GDP per worker, but it actually has comparatively high wages, about $24 per hour on average, but the Fraser Institute doesn't even count that.
Yeah, and as we've said previously, knowing the gross domestic product really doesn't relate directly to a worker anyway. It's very hard for a mere mortal be able to measure his own or her own well-being in the market just quoting a GDP.
No, that's right. And, certainly I think it would make a lot more sense to take a look at the wages that are actually paid in the various economies, because I think for most people that would be a better indicator of the state of the labor market.
Having said that, what is the state of the Canadian labor market from your own point of view?
I'm sorry, Dale, I really didn't hear any of that.
I tell you what we're going to do. It's your phone, I think. I don't think there's anything wrong at this end. We're going to call you back. Do we have your number? I guess we do. We will call you back and hope we get a better line, okay?
Thanks very much.
All right, okay. It's 1220. Aaron Weir disappears. Well, you heard him go, didn't you? Did you hear that click? Everybody heard him go. And we will try to get him back and hopefully get a better line. I thought maybe he was on a cell phone. That was the problem, but... No, it's a landline. I've called Regina quite a few times. Usually the telephones work a little better than Aaron's telephone is working today. So we'll get him to comment a little further on the what's in the Fraser Institute report, and then get him to talk a little bit about exactly his observations of the labor market here in Canada as well. Okay, do we have him up there? Are we going to get him up there soon, or we're just debating the issues here? Aaron Weir, who's the an economist and a research associate with the Canadian Center for Policy Alternatives, and he seems to be able to hear me now, and we're back. Aaron, can you hear me okay now?
Yeah, absolutely. I think we may have just had a bad connection there
just
before.
Just a bad line. Okay. Now, talking about the Fraser Institute, and I had asked you essentially, well, what's your take on the labor market performance in Canada from your point of view? What are the kinds of things that should be focused on if we're actually seriously going to look at this?
Well, sure. I mean, I guess I should start out by saying where I might agree with the Fraser Institute, or at least accept part of their conclusions. Their main theme is that Alberta and Saskatchewan had the best labor markets in North America, and Ontario was a bit behind that. And I think that that is consistent with reality, that Alberta and Saskatchewan have experienced a resource boom in recent years, whereas the manufacturing heartland in Ontario has been struggling. So in terms of job opportunities, I think that's a fair point. But I also think it's quite important to look at the quality of those jobs, the wages paid, the security of the positions. And one of the things that's quite important to job quality is the state of labor legislation and protections for workers. Another thing that really helps is to have unions and the opportunity for workers to join unions and bargain collectively. That tends to improve pay and working conditions. Whereas the Fraser Institute's goal is to argue that all of those factors are negative, that public sector employment, minimum wages, unionization, progressive labor relations laws are all to be done away with.
Well, in fact, yes, they've said that in many different ways in many different reports. But what they're saying, what they're calling disadvantages, are what working people would consider to be very important advantages.
Well, that's right. That's right. And so I actually see the things that the Fraser Institute identifies as problems as being quite positive factors and quite beneficial for working people. And I think, you know, as we sort of approach Labor Day, I mean, it is worth considering the fact that a lot of the gains workers have made over the years do come from both labor legislation and from workers' organizations that, you know, bargain collectively and provide some representation in the workplace.
I can't...
Your call did not go through. Try your call again.
We're calling Regina, Saskatchewan, right? We're not calling Regina in Kazakhstan. Do I have that right? In fact, I think we could probably get a better line in the Kazakhstan than we can. We'll try one last time to see if we can't get a decent line in Regina. Maybe there's a bigger story unfolding in the telephone industry as we speak, as we try to speak with Aaron Weir on the phone. Yes, true enough, Labor Day is coming up, and there will be a lot of people looking at Labor Day and trying to assess the current effectiveness of unions and the current clout that unions may or may not have. It's certainly a good time to be examining those aspects. Remember, the Bank of Montreal just a couple of days ago was talking about its Labor Day survey, which took a mere mortal point of view as well, and questioned people on how confident they felt being a member of the labor force in Canada. And quite a number expected, according to that survey. I don't remember the exact results, but they were all fairly profoundly positive. A lot of people, 60% of the people surveyed by the BMO, were quite secure in their jobs, which, of course, is quite a different story than a couple of years ago, when those feelings of security and confidence and being able to hang on to your job were much lower than that. So does that mean Canadian workers are dreaming in Technicolor, or are they, in fact, whistling past the graveyard? Is it that kind of situation? or do they really have an accurate point of view? I noticed that some business writers in the business commentators were suggesting that Canadian workers who commented on that study really didn't have a very realistic look, a viewpoint in terms of what was going on in Canada. All right, now we're going to try once again. You'd think we're trying to reach the far side of the moon, wouldn't you? And it's only Regina. Aaron, can you hear me now?
I can, and I appreciate your dedication in trying to reach me. I'm now on my cell phone, so we'll see if that
works. Okay, well, then we'll stay on your cell phone till we run the battery down, and then we'll be gone for sure, okay?
Okay, right. Fair enough.
Now, listen, we were talking about the quality of jobs in Canada. That's something, of course, that's not really measured by the Fraser Institute. And the Fraser Institute, it's fair to say, and they're allowed to do this, they take the business point of view, and what they see as an expense, the Canadian worker sees as an advantage, perhaps as a benefit, or perhaps as a better salary than the guy down the street is making.
Well, I think that's right, and I think the way to really read the Fraser Institute's report is as an indication of what's good for employers. So I think
yeah.
Take the measures, and if you're looking to hire workers with a lot of sort of flexibility and relatively low pay, then the Fraser Institute could point you towards jurisdictions that allow that to happen. The interesting thing, though, is that even by the Fraser Institute's own measure, those jurisdictions that have the weakest labor laws and the lowest wages don't necessarily perform the best in terms of job creation. As I mentioned, it's Alberta and Saskatchewan that top the rankings in North America, but Saskatchewan is actually at the bottom of the Fraser Institute's rankings of labor market characteristics, because Saskatchewan actually does have a high level of government employment and relatively high unionization as Canadian provinces go.
Yeah, and we have to know these things in order to assess any important information in these various reports, I think. You know, you hear one particular point of view on day one, and then on day two you hear exactly the opposite point of view. We really have to be paying attention, because the labor market's a fairly complex place.
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. I mean, there's a lot of moving parts to it. And I mean, essentially, what the Fraser Institute does is it takes a huge amount of data and really sort of slices and dices it up and makes some of its own measures, and then, puts those indicators out, which I think can be an effective communication strategy, because, I mean, here we are talking about them, but it's often very difficult for someone to actually disentangle what's being measured.
Goldhawk Fights Back for You airs Monday to Friday, 11 to 1 on AM 740, Zoomer Radio.
Well, 12:33, Aaron Weir is with us. He's an economist and research associate with the Canadian Centre for Policy Alternatives. We're commenting on the Fraser Institute report, Measuring Labour Markets in Canada and the U.S., the 2012 edition, out today. Aaron, if I were to ask you to comment on basically the state of labour today in the country, in terms of the labor market, what would you say? What kind of a rating would you give it?
Well, I mean, certainly the labor market is fairly weak. It hasn't created nearly enough jobs to keep pace with Canada's growing population and growing labor force. Having said that, the situation is even worse in many American states. So I guess there's always that comparison. And I would also add that I think workers' organizations are very much under siege. We've seen a number of multinational companies lock out their workers recently and demand huge concessions. So it's quite a difficult time for Canadian labor.
What do you make of some of the words lately of the finance minister, Jim Flaherty, and the governor of the Bank of Canada talking about what Mark Carney calls dead money, and the fact that a lot of corporations, in their view, are sitting on too much cash and are not using it to invest in growth and invest in other, among other things, in hiring new people.
Well, I think that's absolutely a great point, and I'm glad that Governor Carney made it. Private non-financial corporations in Canada are sitting on more than half $1 trillion of just pure cash, which is quite a startling thing, because that number doesn't even include banks or crown corporations. It's just private non-financial companies. And if you look at an economics textbook, the way it would present the world is that you have entrepreneurs out there borrowing money in order to finance their investments. So you expect the corporate sector to be a net borrower. In fact, it's become a net lender as it's accumulated all this cash. And what that means is it's households that are sort of picking up the slack by doing all the borrowing and spending, which in the short term is good for the economy, but in the longer term has created this huge problem of household debt.
Do you expect this trend to change anytime soon? And if it were to change, what would bring about that change?
Well, it's unfortunately quite a long-running trend. For at least a decade, the corporate sector has been hoarding cash. That was slowed down a little bit by the recession, but it's resumed pretty quickly since then, and we're now at record levels of sort of cash stockpiles in corporate Canada. I think one thing that could make a positive difference is if governments were to reverse some of these recent corporate tax cuts, retain a little bit more of that money, and then reinvest it directly in the Canadian economy.
Well, of course, that's not going to happen anytime soon.
Well, it's perhaps unlikely at the federal level, but some provincial governments, including the government of Ontario, have at least deferred proposed corporate tax cuts. So there's been some concession to my logic on this. But, you know, the argument for corporate tax breaks was that companies were going to turn around and invest that money. And what we've seen is that instead they're just sitting on it. So I think it's quite hard to justify corporate tax cuts in the context that Mark Carney has described.
Well, I think that notion that corporate tax cuts produce jobs at the other end of the tunnel was pretty well wrestled to the ground. Even in the provincial election, I don't think anybody came up with any facts and figures that would suggest that by giving corporations a tax break, the jobs pop out. They don't. They don't seem to.
No, indeed. That's been the record. I mean, Canada's been cutting its corporate tax rates for more than a decade now. And there really isn't a lot of evidence that they've produced improved levels of investment as a share of the economy, which was the promise. And I think that this whole notion of dead money just reinforces that point. It kind of proves where the funds are actually going, which is into corporate bank accounts rather than into investment or job creation.
When we talk about these issues, we talk about labor issues, and we do like to be a little thoughtful around Labor Day, a day of celebration for organized labor in the country. What about the notion of and the issues involved in the productivity of the Canadian worker? Where do we stand in your mind on that? Just how productive are we or not?
Well, Canada's productivity record is fairly poor, and I think that that does go back to what we were discussing in terms of investment. I mean, the big thing that affects labor productivity is the amount of capital that people have to work with. So in other words, workers are much more productive if they have good machinery and equipment and tools to use in performing their jobs. So I think the real reason that productivity has been so poor in Canada is that we really haven't had much in the way of business investment.
Yeah, but some of that would be might relate to worker attitude in some ways. I mean, it's such an uncertain job market. I mean, there are many reasons these days, I would think, not to like your corporate boss. Maybe you're worried about being laid off. Those things would certainly affect productivity too, wouldn't they?
Well, they can, and I certainly think that providing people with more secure employment will tend to improve productivity. There's also some evidence that higher wages will improve productivity because people feel a little bit more committed and a little bit more engaged in their job. So I think those are all valid points. And you know, going back to the Fraser Institute, it's an organization that I think would always suggest that unions are a bad thing for productivity. Yeah. But I think unions can actually help productivity by providing workers a voice in their workplace. And there's often a great deal of knowledge on the shop floor. And if there's a mechanism to sort of transmit that to management, it can make a real positive difference for businesses.
What kind of a future does organized labor have in Toronto? In Canada, rather.
Well, I think that it certainly has an important future. I mean, as I mentioned, labor is under siege, but it's also fighting back and trying to reinvent itself. One thing that's happening right now is two of the large Canadian unions, the Canadian Auto Workers and the Communication, Energy, and Paper Workers, are trying to merge to create a new union. And as part of that, they're proposing to really try to reach out to unorganized workers who aren't currently members of unions. So that will be an interesting.
I read their Aaron. I read their joint manifesto when the CAW members at least took the vote just a number of days ago. It sounds more like the formation of a political party than it does a union.
Well, that's an interesting observation, but I mean, I suppose part of the point they're making is that it is really important for unions to be engaged in politics and public policy, given that you know, government decisions have such a huge effect on industrial relations. So, you know, it's an interesting point, and you know, there may have been ways to tweak the writing of the document. I'm not sure, but I think the substantive point that unions really need to be engaged in the public policy process is quite correct.
Well, and we have two different types. We have unions in the private sector, and we have unions in the public sector. I guess it's fair to say as well that perhaps public sector unions these days are facing more pressure and face more problems than private sector unions.
Well, certainly governments are instituting a lot of austerity, and what that means is layoffs or wage freezes for workers in the public sector. You know, I don't really want to get into a contest of where it's worse, because some of these major strikes and lockouts, you know, such as, you know, Caterpillar in London, Ontario, yes, are clearly a private sector phenomenon. So, you know, there's lots to complain about in both worlds.
No, I wasn't suggesting there was a bed of roses in the private sector by a long shot. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, no, but I mean, I also know, for example, in Ontario, you've got the provincial government really cracking down on teachers and essentially attempting to impose cutbacks on them. So you're quite right to say there's big challenges in the public sector.
Well, and of course, all of this talk of unions does tend in many parts of the population really create negative attitudes towards unions, whether they're public or private.
I think you're right that that's one of the big challenges unions face, is one of public image. And I think that some of that comes from a kind of a corporate-dominated media that is often much less fair than you are to organized labor. But I think it also speaks to the fact that unions need to do a better job themselves of improving their image and communicating their message to Canadians.
And is it your opinion that bigger is going to be better, at least when it comes to the CAW and the CEP?
Well, that's very hard to say. I mean, they themselves have acknowledged that the goal isn't just to create an even bigger union, it's to create a new type of union. And I guess it remains to be seen how successful they'll be in doing that. But it's a very interesting venture to watch. And I think up to a point, bigger can be better because it means, more bargaining power. It means the potential for a larger strike fund. There can be economies of scale in running a union the same as any other organization.
Well, Aaron, I want to thank you very much for your views on labor and just a few days before Labor Day. Are you going to be doing anything labor-oriented on Labor Day?
Oh, yeah, I'll certainly be out at the Labor Day parades and, sort of speaking to people and, celebrating the gains that the workers have made over the past decades and also kind of looking forward to future challenges.
Thanks very much for your time, Aaron.
Oh, thanks so much for having me.
Okay, bye for now.
Bye.
Aaron Weir is an economist and research associate. He used to be with the steelworkers. Now he's with the Canadian Center for Policy Alternatives, and we call upon him from time to time as a kind of corporate antidote, I think would be a good way of putting it.
Gold Hawk Fights Back for You airs Monday to Friday, 11 to 1 on AM 740, Zoomer Radio.